Don't see going here. We are recording, and I'd like to welcome you. It's great to see you. And we are slowly regaining our stride after the conference. There's been an awful lot to do, just picking up the pieces and making sure things are put together. But you will have the opportunity. If you've missed certain things, and in a 13-day conference, no doubt we all miss something, something that you would like to study or review, then this will be on makara.us, and maybe some of it is already. I'm not sure, Michael and BL, is there anything on Makara yet from the conference?
The conference is on the participants page. So the workshops are live now, and the same lengthy unedited versions of each day.
In the unedited version.
The workshops are edited. I'm working on the astrology part right now to make it separate.
That's great. And I would like people in general to be able to sort of access what goes on in our conference, so that maybe next year there'll be a full attendee. So, there's a few of us here now, and I'd like to welcome you. Of course, we have Joe and BL and Michael, who are helping with all matters technical and supportive, and I appear to be here, so I guess I'm here. And welcome Anne and Annette and Astra and Catherine Pyre, I think, and Chris Tonka and Diana and Georgina, Heike and Jesse, hi, and Joe Garceau, Jonathan and Joe Healy, and let's see, who else? Martine, Nasa, and Veronica, and let's see, and here's another one for Georgina. Well, people will join, as they go, but I'm just happy to be reviewing this great subject in this book, which the Tibetan says evades understanding by all, or should we say evades understanding from those who do not have the initiate consciousness. So I don't think we, Ho and Tia, hi, nice to see you. I don't think that we will, presume that we have the initiate consciousness. We may be passing through some of the initiations of the threshold, perhaps that. But he's talking about the third degree and beyond. But we are working our way there. And, if we're really careful about studying this book, it can bring great rewards in understanding. Of course, also it's a little frustrating because, you sometimes ask yourself, well, what is he really saying here? In a way, the book is so far beyond contemporary science that you wonder, when will the catch-up moment occur? But I think in the Aquarian age, it will occur. So we're building towards that as members of the new group of world servers, and we're trying to become enlightened in our own regard, and also so important now to share that degree of light with whomever we may contact in right proportion. That's the thing, how much do you say to anyone? How far do you go before you maybe overwhelm and repel? Or can we speak? I'm asking myself this same question. Can we speak in such a proportional manner that real assimilation can take place? So, these groups are just small little groups compared to the masses of humanity, but they can have such a power over a period of time because they represent the spiritual hierarchy, the best that we can do. I would also like to encourage you as we go along. I never know what's going to be said, and maybe you don't either, but keep some notes or make notes on your computer or something that you would like to bring up and discuss, because otherwise the whole thing can just flow by and you say, what was I interested in all of that information? So if something strikes you when we are going through a particular section of the book, make note of it then, so we can take it up when we have our discussions. And the next few days, next week, is going to be quite demanding. We have all of the Gemini work and the sacred pentagram work and the pre-full moons, which in Gemini are special. There are three pre-full moons that DK talks about, emphasizing in order love, resurrection, and contact. And then we get into the actual moment of the full moon. So it's really a high point, this Festival of the Christ, Festival of Humanity. And don't forget that on the full moon day, we call it World Invocation Day. And Atuya is setting something up for that, so that 15 minutes before every hour, someone from a different country, I don't know all who she may have been in contact with, will be saying the great invocation in their own language, and we will think in our language. And that's what we're supposed to do on World Invocation Day. And if you want to say the great invocation out loud more often, then you're perfectly welcome to do that. It's really important to get it into the ethers. It's still our greatest instrument for facilitating the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy. So let's always remember the immense power and value of the great invocation. Now, let's see where we are here. Where am I? Yeah. Okay. So we seem to be beginning a new section. I better do this so I can see what I'm doing. And it's on the, I think we ended last time with a basic discussion of the, on the physical plane, the salamanders, the fire spirits, the Agni Chaitans, which are of two types, the pranic elementals, and other devas. It's just a little hint, but we have to keep these parallel kingdoms in our consciousness. And so now we're going to, we could review that, but he also talks about the astral plane and especially the Agni Suryans, and they are a difficult group of devas to deal with. So many of the disasters and abortive efforts of magicians come because they do not have mastery over the Agni Suryans of the astral plane, and they occultly drown because they do not know the methods of protecting themselves. But the Agni Suryans as well come in two different forms. And one of the forms is Buddhic. Just the way, if you look at the Agnish Vatas, who are the mental devas, you know that they are divided into two groups, the lower four subplanes and the higher three subplanes of the mental plane have two different qualities of Agnish Vata. And I do believe, I don't know if he's mentioned it, but it's kind of my estimation of it, that the Agni Chaitans, which are very etheric, shall we say, etheric physical, have their higher correspondence of Agni Chaitans on the atmic plane. Now, when we, you know, we want to be able to acquiesce to the will of God, the planetary logos. And that requires some kind of atmic susceptibility at some point. It's not that we can reach, actually, the place where the permanent atoms are found on the atmic or Buddhic plane. He says that's of so high a nature that it's even beyond what the masters can do. But there can be some kind of downflow from our efforts to project, and that downflow can reach us and cause quite a radiation, whether it's of light or of love or of the will to good, spiritual will. So we're working to make the triad, the spiritual triad, more familiar to ourselves. We have all the words, of course, but the words are not the same as the experience. So, you know, let's persist and hope for the coming of the experiences which will validate in our consciousness the reality of these higher levels. Yeah, as he says here, these, let's see if I, yeah. He says, these elementals and devas are called the Agni Suryans, and in their totality are the fiery essences. Now think about that combination of words, the fiery essences of Buddhi. Hence, their lowest manifestation is on the sixth plane, the astral. Okay. Further information concerning these deva lives will be found in this treatise, where they are dealt with at some length. I think we begin to realize what Master Decay tried to give us, and which he is so well equipped to give us. And I'm hoping for all of us that in the next approximately 4 years, we really apply ourselves to the assimilation of what he has given. Because after that, something entirely new may begin to dawn. And we want to be ready with a platform of assimilation, which we will not have unless we really apply ourselves. So here we are on page 69, and I'm just I think that's probably where we left. I can't do too much other than highlight in the book. That's all I can do at the moment. And this is the personality ray and fire by friction. So he divides his subject into the work of the three rays. I suppose that has to do with the three aspects of divinity, the major rays of aspect. And then under that, the personality ray, the egoic ray, and the monadic ray. The great majority of this book is given to the explanation of the egoic ray. But here we are still in the realm of fire by friction, and will be for a while. The personality ray and the permanent atom. And by that, he does not mean, of course, the higher permanent atoms. He simply means the ones that the personality ray can access. And we sometimes call that, or these permanent atoms, we call them the atomic triangle. Let's see if I can do anything here that shows it whatsoever. We need something bigger, I think. Something bigger. Okay, let's see here. So the personality ray has to do with two permanent atoms. The etheric permanent atom, we call it the physical permanent atom, the astral permanent atom, but not the monastic permanent atom. Rather, the mental unit, which it's a fourfold structure, and it's been built up even during the animal phase as mentality has grown. So the personality ray can operate upon these three members of the atomic triangle. And if you really look at it, what we call personality focuses, or at least potentially so, on the same subplane, i.e. subplane number four, as the mental unit. The mental unit is found there as well. So let's see if I can, I don't know if I can make anything any bigger. Usually I can, but I'm not succeeding here. Let's see, is there a way to do that? There should be a way to do that, but I'm not going to bother with it right now. Anyway, maybe we'll consider it big enough. You get the idea. All right. Now going back. So, and then the personality ray and karma, another subject which should be very interesting to us. See, basically, a lot of karma waits for us to reincarnate. It's stored within the necessity for it is stored within the atomic triangle. And when we leave behind those three vehicles and spend time within our causal body between incarnations, we are not subject to that karma. We have a different consciousness altogether, fed by the angel of the presence, fed by the master who works with souls. But when we re-enter, The karma awaits for us, and it is the angel of the presence representing the solar angel who determines just how much and of what type of karma should be worked off in a particular life. They are experts when it comes to handling the members of the atomic triangle. So maybe, you know, we have an enhanced consciousness, but these great beings, the solar angels, have already been to Sirius and have changed hierarchies and have developed a tremendous monastic knowledge of the operation of the members of the atomic triangle. So they, how can I put it? They know how to stage an incarnation so that there can be success, so that the personality need not be overwhelmed, and so that a certain amount of karma, whether good or bad, it's all binding, can be worked out. All right. Now, the work of the three rays. I just want to somehow prove to myself that I can actually highlight anything. All right. We hear touch upon a matter of wide general interest, yet which is withal very little comprehended. We can attest to that. I refer to the subject of the permanent atoms. Now, remember that DK said, don't get too invested in the study of the permanent atoms, because it will take you backwards and will materialize your consciousness, or at least attach your consciousness to the material factor. But we have to know something. So let's take a look at what he says here in this note. Oh, it's a big note. I'll read it. Permanent atom. An appropriated point of atomic matter. Now, in general, you see they are found on the atomic subplane. The mental unit is not an entire permanent atom. A tiny center of force, which forms the central factor and attractive agency around which the sheaths of the incarnating monad are built. So it is a center of power. It is magnetic. It attracts the materials needed to build the sheath, and maybe is involved in the dissipation of that sheath as well. So these are analogies. The incarnating monad builds its sheaths, and then the analogy, these are strung like pearls upon the sutratma, or thread. It's called the life thread. It is the living, sustaining factor which keeps the various vehicles in incarnation. If the life thread were withdrawn, it's sometimes called the silver thread. DK says, well, maybe that's not the best name for it, but it is sometimes called that, the silver thread, then there is dissipation and disintegration on the outer levels. Okay, the word ray, a stream of force or an emanation. Now, let's see. there's a, I am a point of light within a greater light, okay? And now comes what describes what a ray is. I am a strand of loving energy within the within love divine. I forget exactly what stream, within the stream of love divine. I'm a strand. So a ray is a connecting stream of energy, a stream of force or an emanation. Now, in a way then, every particularity within our universe, whether it's a great being or a lesser being like we are, or a little atom of substance or a subatomic particle, they are all in a way emanations, and they are all characterized by their ray quality. They ray forth from whatever logos is the hyparxis, that's a word, hyparxis, the head of a hierarchy. They ray forth, whether they're big or little. And we happen to be, you know, a ray as well. We are an emanation. The Buddhists really study emanation. The Gnostics studied emanation. And it's a very important concept for us, this emanation of the many from the one. The solar logos, or the macrocosm, now, you know, there are really big macrocosms, but he's stopping with the solar logos, manifests through three major rays and four minor rays. Familiar idea to us, of course. The monad, or microcosm, you know, in a way, the monad is the central spiritual sun in our little system, and appears to here to have an analogy to the solar logos. It is a sun-like factor in our system. The monad, or microcosm, likewise manifests through three rays, as mentioned in the text above. All rays express a peculiar and specialized type of force. Now just think of the combination of the various rays that are likely to be found in the system of any human being. I once thought of having some kind of colored insignia for every person, with the monadic ray drawn in its color at the very center, and with concentric circles of different colors representing the different vehicles and their rays. It would be like an insignia that would show you coloristically your energy system all at once. Okay, so all rays express a peculiar and specialized type of force. And then the triad. This is literally Atma Buddhi Manas, the expression of the monad, sometimes called the personality of the monad, just as the personality is the expression of the ego. And by ego, well, we can mean a couple of different things. We can mean the spiritual triad, or we can mean the egoic lotus, causal body. The monad expresses itself through the triad. And in its lowest or third aspect forms the egoic or causal body, the infant or germinal ego. Basically, let's see, through the triad. In other words, it's the mental permanent atom on the first subplane of the mental plane that generates the egoic lotus. And of course, with the help of the solar angel and the help of the master, but especially the combination. In other words, the ray of the lowest part of the triad, and all those points in the triad have the same ray, extends itself onto the second, really onto the third level of the mental plane, and is instrumental in generating a causal lotus. I wonder if I, well, maybe we just kind of look at that here. And basically, here's the monastic permanent atom, okay? Now, open with, okay. And you see there's a line that goes from it onto the higher mental plane. And basically, it starts to generate the egoic lotus on the third subplane first. But it does seem to have a connection with the very center of that egoic lotus, which is, in this particular case, found on the second subplane. Of course, this is probably a picture of a more advanced type where the egoic lotus, through preliminary initiation, has moved from the third subplane where the egoic lotus of average man is found onto the second, where the initiate egoic lotus is found. All right. Let's see where we are here. All right. Terminal ego. Okay. Similarly, the ego expresses itself through the threefold lower man, mental, emotional, and etheric, these being the reflection of the higher triad. And these three give rise to dense physical manifestation. Okay, a reflection, in this particular case, Atma can correlate with mind. The Atmic plane is a very mental plane. Buddhi will naturally and always correlate with the emotional body. And the lowest part of the triad, the abstract mind, will correlate with the etheric system. Now, there are ways to reverse it so it's upside down, and a different type of reflection will then take place, which is not like a superimposition. It's more a turn. And in that case, Atma will correlate with the etheric physical, Buddhi again with the emotional level, and the abstract mind will correlate with the concrete mind. So there are two types of reflection. One I call superimposition, where everything maintains its proper relationship. And then the other is a kind of a turn, where you have the closest to the closest, the Buddhi to the astral, and the outlying Atma to the lower parts of man. All right, so that's a footnote, and I guess we have to read those. Good. Each body or form wherein spirit functions has for its focal point on each plane an atom composed of matter of the atomic subplane of each plane. Now, are we in the right Yeah, we are. I'm always aware that I may forget to press the right button, and I'm talking about something that is not being demonstrated or visibly demonstrated. All right, so now this leaves the mental unit out of the picture, but if you combine the mental unit with the monastic permanent atom, you are combining a 4 with a 3, and you get the 7, which are found in the astral permanent atom and in the etheric permanent atom. As far as the Buddhic permanent atom goes, it is said to be threefold. As far as the Atmic permanent atom, it is also said to be threefold and not sevenfold. Okay. Each body or form wherein spirit functions, remember, it's all from the monad on down. Everything really is an expression of the monad, has for its focal point on each plane an atom composed of matter of the atomic subplane of each plane. Okay, now that's as far as we go. We include the atmic, buddhic, mental, astral, and etheric planes. What about the monadic plane? What about the logoic plane? Well, there are vortices of force on those planes, which work their way down into all of the lower planes and subplanes. So this atom serves as a nucleus, a central powerhouse for the distribution of force, for the conservation of faculty, meaning what you built up in your personality life is stored in these permanent atoms, and then via Venus, via the solar angel, angel of the presence, is alchemized, uplifted, withdrawn into the egoic lotus. So your faculties are built into the permanent atoms, but the egoic lotus, the angel of the presence, has a way of extracting that quality that you have built and building it into the egoic lotus. They are said to be these solar angels, angel of the presence, experts in alchemy. So this is a kind of a transformation that they can make happen, because how else would you get everything that you've accomplished into that higher mental plane? You couldn't do it. We need them to help do it. Okay. This serves as a nucleus for the distribution of force, for the conservation of faculty, for the assimilation of experience. You know, we do a lot of things, and what's the harvest of it all? And for the preservation of memory. All memories are stored in the permanent atoms. These atoms are in direct connection with one or other of the three great rays in connection with the microcosm, which we are, you know. Okay. Now, how does it work? The monadic ray is the synthetic ray of the microcosm. When you talk about synthesis, which a term we glibly use, you know, we are talking about the monad. the egoic ray and the personality ray. Okay. And, you know, you might look at it and say, according to this overlay principle, that the higher triangle comes down and superimposes itself upon the lower triangle, we might say, and I think he will say, that the monadic ray affects the mental permanent atom and probably the mental unit. The egoic ray particularly is associated with the astral permanent atom, and the personality ray is particularly associated with the etheric permanent atom. I could call it the etheric physical permanent atom, but it's on the etheric level of the etheric physical body. So it's truer to call it the etheric permanent atom. And these three great rays charge up the different permanent atoms and affect the vehicles which the permanent atoms are holding in coherent form. Now, you know, here's a practical example. And I may have said this before, but there was a man, his initials were L-U-T. He wasn't among the most successful of disciples because he had some pretty heavy karmic tendencies. But I think it was love, understanding, and something else, okay? And he thought he had a Ray 1 physical body. Why would this be the case when he actually had a Ray 3 physical body? And the reason it was so was that his first Ray personality was making its powerful impression upon the etheric physical permanent atom, and somehow transmitting first ray characteristics from the personality to the physical mechanism. So remember that your personality ray is going to affect the dynamics of your physical body, and probably etheric too. Your soul ray is going to affect the dynamics of your astral body, regardless of what may be the ray of your astral body. And your monadic ray will affect the dynamics of your mental vehicle. And so that's a combination that has to be examined when we ask, you know, what's going on in our personality vehicles. Okay. Each of these rays has a connection with one or other of the permanent atoms in the lower threefold man, and has a direct action upon spirillae found within the atom. Now, you know, it's going to be probably a better statement of what I just said. Spirillae, what are they? Oh my goodness. This is from Occult Chemistry by Besant and Leadbeater. In order to examine the construction of an atom, a space is artificially made. Then, if an opening be made in the wall thus constructed, remember Fohat digging holes in space, the surrounding force flows in, the three worlds immediately appear, surrounding the whole, H-O-L-E, with their triple spiral of 2.5 coils, and returning to their origin by a spiral within the atom. Now we would just have to look at Babbitt's atom, which would be, you know, an extensive project. We won't do that right now. These are at once followed by 7 finer worlds, which, following the spiral of the first three on the outer surface, and returning to their origin by a spiral within that, flowing in the opposite direction, form a caduceus with the first three. So we see that the symbols that have been presented to us are based on occult physiological fact. Each of the three coarser whorls, flattened out, makes a closed circle. Each of the 7 finer ones, similarly flattened out, makes a closed circle. The forces, have I read that properly? Yeah. The forces which flow in them again come from outside, from a 4th dimensional space. Now, in some ways, we can consider the planes as dimensions. Sometimes when looking for the 4th dimension, we consider time to be the 4th dimension. I don't think that is what is meant here. The forces which flow in them again come from outside and from a 4th dimensional space. Each of the finer worlds is formed of 7, yet finer ones, set successively at right angles to each other, each finer than its predecessor, and these we call spirillae. So this is the story of the spirillae, and let's see, apply. No, it's read only, I can't do anything. Each spirillae is animated by the life force of a plane, and 4 are at present normally active. Well, we're the 4th kingdom, 4th creative hierarchy, and we have not yet really entered the 5th kingdom. 4 are presently active, and it's correlated with the rounds. We're in round number 4. In round number 5 of the spirillae will be activated. Their activity in an individual may be prematurely forced by yoga practice. Now, most people will have 4 spirillae operating, and others can force ahead and become higher in their expression and are members of the kingdom of souls, etc. Now I'm wondering, no, that's not it. If I can possibly locate something here, and at least to take a look at it, you know. And, all right, here we go. And I'll try to make this visible in just a minute. And basically, you know the diagram. This is what we have to study. And we have these different kinds of whorls, and spirillae are set at right angles to the whorls. And as I say, it's a huge project to really get in here and look at every particularity. But the idea is that different ranks of spirillae are activated at different levels of evolution. So if you are an average human being, four ranks of spirillae are activated. The fifth and the sixth are correlated with the causal body and with the spiritual triad. And the seventh and final rank of spirillae is correlated with the monad. Now, I'm not even going to get into all this, but we do see the three major ones, and we find different ways to count the seven. As I understand it, Babbitt was a student of Master K.H., and maybe that's where he got the information. But sometime we'll have to, I mean, it's just an itty-bitty kind of study and extremely detailed. We don't have to go into it right this moment. Okay, so we've seen a definition of spirillae. We've understood that usually there are seven ranks of spirillae, and that the number of the groupings of spirillae correlate with the advancement of the human being. We are trying to become members of the fifth kingdom of nature. That will mean that five spirillae, in other words, the fifth group of spirillae will be activated. And if we go higher, the sixth, and higher, the seventh. We have noted in Letters on Occult Meditation that the atoms of the lower threefold man underwent a twofold process. Okay. They were first vivified in rotation, and each held the light in ordered sequence until the lower triangle was entirely illumined. Now, what does that mean? Well, for the very primitive man, the radiation, the holding of the light, will pertain to the etheric physical permanent atom. For the person with emotional Atlantean consciousness, the astral permanent atom will show more brightly, and the etheric physical permanent atom will proportionally wane. For the mentally focused individual, and I didn't say mentally polarized yet, mentally focused individual, we will see the mental unit, which is an incomplete structure, having to be joined with the monastic permanent atom, but that will be the most vivified point. Now, for people like ourselves, we hope we are moving out of the emotional stage, out of the kama monastic stage, into mental clarity and a mind held steady in the light. So rotation is helping to create the degree of radiance that comes from any of these permanent atoms. Eventually, transmutation took place, or to word it otherwise, the polarization eventually shifted into the three permanent atoms of the triad, and out of the three permanent atoms of the lower triangle. But when he talks about the lower triangle, he's not being specific here, because really what you have is two permanent atoms and one mental unit. But sometimes, you know, just for convenience, he calls the mental unit a kind of permanent atom. Now, you know, we've been through this, you and I. We have evolved. We have had different permanent atoms stimulated over the course of millions of years. The physical permanent atom is transcended, and the polarization becomes monastic or mental. Now, that's that. Remember, I talked about the overlay. You overlay the triangle, we call the spiritual triad, you overlay that on the atomic triangle, mental unit, astral permanent atom, physical permanent atom. So the mental permanent atom is correlating with the, in this case, the etheric physical. The astral permanent atom is transcended, and the polarization becomes Buddhic, while the mental unit is superseded by the permanent atom of the fifth plane, the atmic. And in that connection, I would just like to bring forward an old adage. He who does the will of God shall know. He who does the will of God shall know. In other words, if we perform according to the will which descends from the atmic plane, we will know mentally. So this is the superimposition of the triad upon the lower triangle that we call the atomic triangle. This is all brought about by the action of the three rays upon the atoms and upon the life within each atom. The relationship between these three rays and the permanent atoms might be summarized as follows. Okay, we looked at it. The personality ray has a direct action upon the physical permanent atom. That was my example of the disciple LUT. The egoic ray has a similar action upon the astral permanent atom, and the monadic ray has a close connection with the mental unit. So, you know, when you're trying to find the rays of your lower vehicles, you cannot forget that from above, another stream of force is affecting that vehicle. And there will be a kind of combination within your lower vehicle, which consists of the ray of that vehicle plus the ray of impress, if I can call it that, the ray of impress from one of the higher stations. Even the personality is higher than its vehicles. Okay. The effect which they have is threefold, but is not simultaneous. They work ever, as do all things in nature, in ordered cycles. Now, one day we'll achieve the fifth level of the atmic plane and the great science of cycles, as regards our planet, at least, will be more revealed to us. The stimulation, for instance, that is the result of the action of the monadic ray upon the mental unit, is only felt when the aspirant treads the path or after he has taken the first initiation. Now, I want to quote something of importance that we may forget when we use words loosely. Every true aspirant has taken the first initiation. Every true aspirant has taken the first initiation. And at that point, the monad is working as well within the soul body, the egoic lotus. And that particular type of work is not detectable by the brain consciousness, by the ordinary consciousness of the human being, yet the monad is at work at that time in the soul body. So the action of the monadic ray upon the mental unit is only felt when the aspirant treads the path, which means, you know, starting at the first normal initiation or after he has taken the first initiation. You take the first initiation and you are really then treading the path, and not really until. So there's two types of aspirants. The aspirant who is aspiring to become the true aspirant, somewhere in the fifth petal process, after having lost much of the lower ego centralization, we begin to aspire to something higher. And what we're aspiring to is that first degree and the path, which occurs when we become a true aspirant and take the first initiation. And I'll bet that many of us who are gathered here and who persist in the study of Master DK and who are trying to beautify their lives and live according to the spiritual rules, it's very likely that they have taken the first initiation. The action of the egoic ray upon the astral permanent atom. See, he's telling us the point in time at which this occurs, is felt as soon as the ego, you know, your soul center, can make good connection with the physical brain. That takes a little while, and you know, when you work in the arcane school and you work in the various esoteric schools, the first thing is to help connect up the brain, the mind, and the soul. So that's when the action of the egoic ray can be felt. When this is so, the egoic ray is beginning to affect the atom powerfully and continuously. This occurs when a man is highly evolved. See, you can be what he's calling highly evolved before taking the first initiation. Well, compared with where most human beings are at this time, it is a high stage of evolution. And then this is felt in the following way. Now, I'll just finish this little bit. First, I suppose this is the egoic ray we're talking about here. It plays upon the wall of the atom as an external force and affects its rotary and vibratory action. I suppose it speeds up and becomes more radiant. Second, it stimulates the inner fire of the atom and causes its light to shine with increasing brilliancy. Third, it works upon the spirilli and brings them all gradually into play. Now we're talking about the spirilli of the astral permanent atom. So that these are the three things that happen when the monad affects the mental unit, and more specifically now, when the egoic ray affects the astral permanent atom. Now you may say to yourself, gosh, all this is pretty technical stuff. But unless we know the technicalities of occultism, we will be less fit to work as occultists, spiritual occultists in the New Age. And it will be an age, because there is so much fifth ray that's going to be coming in. It will be a scientific age. And the science of spiritual occultism will be developed, and we will find ourselves in a position to help a lot more people by actual knowing instead of just believing this or that. So may all of these details, which are very solid teaching, may they enter our consciousness, and may we have the experiences associated with them. Okay. Next time, whenever that is, we will go on with the personality ray and the permanent atom. He's already dealt with the monadic ray a little bit and with the egoic ray a little bit. But maybe something a bit more extensive, looks like it. Well, yeah. We'll take that up next time. And I don't know when next time is. I haven't checked the big calendar that Tuya and Anne are making for us. But you'll have it in your possession, the corrected version. And then maybe you can join us when the time comes. Michael? And BL. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at the master calendar now, and it looks to me like it will be Friday the 11th of June at 5 p.m.
Okay, let's see. We're on page there's Babbitt's Atom. Okay, I want to say thank you, BL, and I just want to say that that I've written detailed commentary on all this stuff. So if you are of a mind to study, it's there. Now, the way we're handling these kinds of courses is a little more casual, spontaneous, what comes to mind, because, that is better than just reading what I've written. But if you want to read what I've written in a studential manner, then it's all on Makara. And I think some of the things I said will be helpful. So this is the end of what? BL, what are we ending here? And I'll just say beginning, BE, beginning of a treatise on Cosmic Fire video commentary. I'm not sure what number it is. I should probably know that, you know, but I don't. Okay.
Hey, hold on. I've got it pulled up. Okay. It's program 48.
Okay.
Group program 44.
Program 48. Group program. Thanks, BL. 44 and maybe 11th of June, 21. You know, I'd love to be able to do this every day with you. It's just that, you know, there are limitations, which I guess we all have to acknowledge. So they exist. And you know, we have quite a extensive offering of these kinds of programs. So my advice to you is make it all into a sphere of knowledge. Make it into a sphere of knowledge, and we'll find that you can get to any place from any place. It's all interconnected. And so this one has been program 47 and group program 43. And our date today is 21st of May.
Oops, no. I may have led you astray.
Oh.
The last one we have posted to Makara was program 47 and was group program 44. So this is program 48, group program. Oh, wait a minute. This is 48, group program 44. The next one on the 11th of June will be 49 and group program 45.
Okay, so I'm going to just change that. 49, 45, and this one being 48 and 44. All right. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Now, friends, it's your turn. Regarding anything you might like to discuss in what was offered. Or, you know, in general, in the field of occultism. If you have any thoughts or wish to either write or speak your thoughts.
Michael?
Yep.
I just wanted to say that when you were talking about, you know, our rays and the concentric circles and the different colors, Dwayne Carpenter has done a lot of work with that, and he's got that information on his website. He takes and he puts it.
Does he have the concentric circles on his website? Oh, okay. Well,
not only does he have the concentric circles in the website, but then he is able to twirl them and make them. I can post I can post a link of some of his really cool stuff.
Okay, that's great. Dwayne really knows what he's talking about, and so right. you can go there. Can go there, but first of all, of course, in a way, you have to think about your own color combination. See, I mean, because there are going to be many, many combinations. You know, like, let's just say, if I was doing my own thing, I would have a spot of indigo blue in the center, surrounded by green, surrounded again by Indigo, basically, and then with another circle of, I'll call it yellow, and rose, and green. Now that would be like unique to me. So in a way you have to ponder on your unique combination and see if contemplating it gives you any kind of recognition. And of course you can do this musically too. There are ways of sounding certain chords. The Tibetan goes into this quite a bit in Letters on Occult Meditation. And every one of those concentric circles would be associated with a particular note. And sometimes the notes are doubled. And when they are, they're stronger. So whether by color or whether by music, you can get kind of a symbol of your present entire ray combination. It may change somewhat in the next life, but probably your interior circles will not change. So, you know, let's, you know, take advantage of everything that Duane has, because he's artistically and occultly, he's been studying this a long time. Yeah. Okay, is there anything that anybody would like to say or ask or whatever?
Okay, Jesse says, are there any documents you can point to that discuss the initiations and each initiation specifically and how it may work and what it entails occultly?
There most definitely is. And it's not so much a document as the very first book for the general public written by the Tibetan, which you know is Initiation Human and Solar. And initiation after initiation is discussed in great detail. All the ceremonial aspects, all the phases of it, you know, the taking of the vow, the oath, the impartation of certain sacred and secret words, the creating of a vacuum which closes out those who have been attending who have not yet achieved that degree. I would say it's such a good book, Initiation, Human and Solar. And by the way, I have a detailed commentary on that written out on Makara. So you can either read the book or reread the book as it is, or you can study my commentary in which every word in the book Initiation Human and Solar is there, plus what I thought would be relevant to express about those words at the time I was writing it. So, you know, as much as can be given by the Tibetan thus far has been given. And you know, I so frequently pick up Initiation Human and Solar and try to reread every year as much as I possibly can those details about each initiation. That's what I would recommend, Jesse. Okay, anything else?
Okay, well, I gave him a link to the list on Makara that shows all your different commentary, and they will find the IHS commentary there. I also just gave him the link for the Lucis Trust and the online books.
Yes, good, very good. Very good. Okay.
All right, I don't see any other question. Oh, here we go. Heike says, if the spirale are in a right angle to each other, does the activation of a spirilla correspond with a kind of perception, getting into a deeper dimension, or like the world changes, like being in a right angle to before, and that becomes the new normal? Just pondering, it seems to correspond with some of my perception.
Well, I would say, look, when you activate a whole rank of spirilli, you are definitely changing your consciousness. In other words, a person who has the fourth spirilla, or the rank of spirilli activated, will have a lesser consciousness than those who have the fifth rank of spirilli activated, and so it goes. So it's all very progressive. And, you know, I understand what you're saying, the kind of right angle and maybe a different perspective arises. But I would simply say that the spirilli are part of the mechanism that open the door to enhanced perception on particular planes. So certain planes may be closed off to us. For instance, does anybody right now know what is going on in his causal body because his consciousness is right now focused consciously in his causal body? And, you know, we could say, well, okay, maybe yes, maybe no, but probably not very extensively. But when the fifth ranking of spirilli are activated, then the consciousness of that plane and that particular structure or egoic lotus will be very conscious, and meditation will be much more successful. Now, the masters themselves, they pretty well still preserve the higher permanent atoms and their spirilli. And that means that they can be quite fully conscious on the atmic, buddhic, and, well, abstract mental plane. So they've already done that, and it's in their consciousness. And by building the Antikarana, we can help activate those spirilli, which will open the nature of the plane to us, where right now things are a little bit obscure. So consciousness will be enhanced with the activation of higher and higher ranks of spirilli. Anything else?
Jesse says perhaps the 90-degree crossover creates a chakra vortice, which brings in other forces.
Okay, well, you know, it's a speculation, and let's just say that all of us are students of this coming science. So we make intelligent speculation, and the time will come when we can confirm whether our speculations are accurate or not yet accurate. It's certainly, you know, a thought that can be entertained. Anything about occultism in general that you would like to discuss? I know it's a big load. All of this is a big load. And it's a heavy book in more ways than one, you know. It's got 1,300 pages in it, roughly. And it's a lifetime project for us. But we gain by having a well-stocked mind, as Alice Bailey said. Let the student of spirituality have a well-stocked mind to make sure that the speculations, the thoughts, have some kind of solid anchor to them. We've all seen what can happen when the mind becomes completely unhinged. There are people today following the most absurd conspiracy theories. It's almost like Alice in Wonderland, you know? They've gone down a certain rabbit hole and they've become obsessed with certain unfounded thoughts, which they take as reality. Now, we students have been mystics in the past, and that is a phase we must pass through, and we must retain what Neptune can give us. It's maybe the most important planet in this particular solar system. Even though we're told it doesn't really belong to the solar system, that's another matter. But occultism is going to depend on the planet of Uranus, the planet of occult mind. So without losing our sensitivity, our love, our connectedness to others, we begin to cultivate occult mind under Uranus. And that's what this book, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, is all about. And that's what the Tibetans' writing is all about, to deliver to those who are ready a form of stable spiritual occultism upon which we can rely and in which we can be confident when we talk to other people about reality rather than fancy or imagination, you know. There are so many wild theories out there that are just flaky and dangerous. And we have to be an anchor for the consciousness that the consciousnesses that we confront when we're dealing with other people. A point of reliability when it comes to our occult understanding. Otherwise, you know, like in the Bible, it'll be a situation of the blind leading the blind, and they both fall into the ditch. We don't want that to happen. Okay. Anything else, friends?
Jesse says, the spirali remind via analogy of the human body and the chakra system.
Well, you know, all of these things are interrelated. The permanent atoms and the chakras are closely interplaying all the time. But the ability to focus in a particular area is depending on a particular plane, is depending in great measure on the degree of activation of the spirali. Now, remember again, he did warn us, don't get too micro about all of these tiny structures. Some people do that, you know. They go too far, and their consciousness becomes more obsessed with the material element when they should be moving into the consciousness of the soul. So we need to have a basis, yes. But we also need to remember that it is a foundation for our soul studies, we might say. That's our next frontier. Is that it? Is that it, friends, or whatever?
She says, understand, we'll watch out for concretization.
Yeah, we just don't want to be trapped by the concrete. There's a kind of entrapment that is possible in the lower mind. And we need to build the antikarana toward the higher mind. But many people have a fantastic concrete mind, but they're not going to venture into the areas which must be cultivated now. So, matter of fact, he said that the concrete mind can be a real barrier. And then he said something that should warn all of us, that the members of the Black Lodge, or the Lodge of Materialism, have fantastic ability with the concrete mind and have carried it further than we can imagine. And the danger is, and for them it has pretty well happened, that the concrete mind itself separates itself off from everything else and becomes a 13th sphere, or maybe kind of an 8th sphere. It becomes a sphere all to itself. And that, he says, is a disaster. And obviously, over the course of different solar systems and so forth, that kind of isolation of that 8th or 13th sphere has to be broken down. So those are some of the things. But when we study the Tibetan, we are pretty well safeguarded from doing what I just mentioned. We really get into the extension of consciousness into the higher spaces in accordance with this second solar system. So the danger of us becoming that type of mental, concrete magician, I think, is relatively slight. We'll just follow the Tibetan's advice and we'll be led in the right manner. Okay? Is that it then?
Yes, I think so. She adds, it becomes a trap, which is pretty much what you were describing.
Yeah, it does, And people get really proud of their mind, But, the old saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. All knowledge is a little knowledge. Knowledge, therefore, is a dangerous thing. It depends on how we're going to use it. So I assume that, even though we're in that section which is relatively concrete compared to the other sections of the book, I think we will see that we are building the foundation for our study next on solar fire, which is coming along as we progress. So thanks, everybody. And I guess is anything going on tomorrow? I know there's things happening. I hope you have the monthly calendar. I know we're going to be starting to offer the sacred pentagram and the pre-full moon, Gemini pre-full moon meditations on love, resurrection, and contact. And there's some things in the Esoteric United Nations that are going to be offered. So just stay tuned. Yeah,
the announcements went out on that. And earlier, I gave them the two links, the one for the Gemini page on MortarFederation.com and the one for the weekly events on MortarFederation.com. And I've extended it. It goes through this Sunday, but then I also extended it a week beyond that. So everything is there. It's got everything you're talking about. And we, of course, got the announcement a couple of days ago. So
excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, BL. And thank you, Joe, members of our, you know, well, factotum doing everything, you know, communications team and the other members of our communications team helping so much to make sure that the information gets to you. So now let's close with the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. 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 Thank you, everybody. And we look forward to working with you during the coming week, which is a spiritually very important week in the higher interlude. Okay. We'll be seeing you before long. All the very best. Lots of love. Bye-bye.